Fleeta Brown is here. Welcome, Fleeta.
Hi, Aaron.
Who are you going to talk about this month?
Well, you know, I often talk about contemporary poets with books coming out right now. But today I'd like to talk about the work of Lucille Clifton, who died in 2010. I knew Lucille for quite a while before that. She kept promising me she'd come to the University of Delaware, where I taught, to give a reading. Each time we had it planned, her health deteriorated. But finally, in spite of being so frail she could barely walk, she did come, because, as she said, she promised. Lucille was like that. She was way past needing to do readings to promote her work. She was just plain generous. I remember watching her get out of my car and hobble into a restaurant, gripping my arm, smiling but in obvious pain. The book I'd like to focus on this time is called Mercy, published by BOA, B-O-A, Editions in 2004, and a National Book Award winner. Her poems are short, with no capitalization, each line having a few strong stresses. They feel like the essential truth of the situation, whatever it may be. She can be angry, she can be funny, she can be delicate and graceful. The epigraph to this book is, "The only mercy is memory." The poems remember with a compassion that seems to spread even to us, the readers. Her memory is long. It remembers the slavery of her people, the pain and heartbreak in her own family, her own suffering, the suffering of all of us. Here's an example. This poem is called Mulberry Fields. They thought the field was wasting, and so they gathered the marker rocks and stones and piled them into a barn. They say that the rocks were shaped, some of them scratched with triangles and other forms. They must have been trying to invent some new language. They say the rocks went to build that wall there, guarding the manor, and some few were used for the state house. Crops refused to grow. I say the stones marked an old tongue, and it was called eternity, and pointed toward the river. I say that after that collection, no pillow in the house dreamed. I say that somewhere under here molders one called Alice, whose great-grandson is old now, too, and refuses to talk about slavery. I say that at the master's table only one plate is set for supper. I say no seed can flourish on this ground once planted, then forsaken. Wild berries warm a field of bones. Bloom how you must, I say. With no punctuation, there is the possibility of reading that last line, bloom how you must, I say, or bloom how you must, I say. The difference is bloom any way you can, or how in the world can you bloom after this, after slavery's cruelty? It's a lonely poem, the last dregs of what slavery did to people. And another Mercy Through Memory poem, in this case, Mercy for her sister. It's called Here Rests My Sister Josephine, born July in 29 and dead these 15 years, who carried a book on every stroll. When Daddy was dying, she left the streets and moved back home to tend him. Her pimp came too, her diamond Dick, and they would take turns reading. A Bible aloud through the house. When you poem this, and you will, she would say, remember the book of Job. Happy birthday and hope to you, Josephine, one of the East's most wanted. May heaven be filled with literate men. May they bed you with respect. In this collection, there's a series called September Song, a poem in 7 days, written for or during, I don't know, the 9/11 attack. Here's one from that group. It's called Saturday 9/15/01. And I'm just hearing in the background the the awfulness of 9/11, but it doesn't enter into this little poem at all. I know a man who perished for his faith. Others called him an infidel, chased him down, and beat him like a dog. After he died, the world was filled with miracles. People forgot he was a Jew and loved him. Who can know what is intended? Who can understand the gods? Plain statement, but it carries a such strength and sense of decisive choice of language. We hear it as a poem. And the book ends with a long section called The Message from the Ones, it's capitalized, the Ones, received in the late 70s. And that's part of the title. Who are the ones? Well, here's a poem about that. We are ones who have not rolled selves into bone and flesh. Call us ones. We will call you one eye, field of feeling, singing ear, quick hand. We will make use of these. Well, that leaves us kind of at a point that gradually the building of these poems, you begin to sense about the ones, although she never quite says. So here's another. In the saying of you, we will sometime be general and sometime particular. In the saying of we are we. So, okay, here's another. We are here between the lines. You reach through us to raise your morning cup. You have assigned us countries of the dead, but we are neither dead nor immigrant. We are just here where you are. So you gradually get this sense of kind of building into the ones being the spirits. The series is a fierce indictment of what we've done to the earth and each other, and spoken, as Lucille always does, gently, even if the sentiment isn't gentle. Here's an example of that tone. The patience of the universe is not without an end. So might it slowly turn its back. So might it slowly walk away, leaving you alone in the world you leave your children. So that could be, that poem could be kind of a motto of every environmentalist. Yet the spirit voices also have a humorous edge. So here's another. The angels have no wings. They come to you wearing their own clothes. They have learned to love you and will keep coming unless you insist on wings. You can't pin Clifton down any more than you can talk her sentences into using periods and capital letters. She's always sneaking in where your defenses are down. The poems seem easy, too easy. Then you turn to look again and they come down on you like a mallet. You don't recover from her poems. I'll end with this one I often think of. It's quintessential Clifton. There's deep pain and deep celebration in every line and a bit of wryness. No way to paraphrase it or reduce it. It's reduced already and says everything already. Here's the little poem. Surely I am able to write poems celebrating grass and how the blue in the sky can flow green or red, and the waters lean against the Chesapeake shore like a familiar. Poems about nature and landscape, surely. But whenever I begin, the trees wave their knotted branches and why? Is there under that poem always an other poem? If you think you know Lucille Clifton's poems, read them again. They'll turn into new poems again. The book I'm reading from is called Mercy.
Thank you, Fleeta.